everyone. My name is Belinda Granger, and I'm the professional liaison for Challenge Family. I'm also known throughout the triathlon world as being a bit of a mother hen to the pro athletes. Of course, given the current circumstances, I've been thinking about the athletes a lot lately. So we came up with the idea of Coffee Calls with Belinda, which basically gives me and you an opportunity to check in with them all and see how they're all going. So welcome to the official Challenge Family podcast. I think it's time for a coffee. Welcome back to Coffee Calls with Belinda. My name is Belinda Granger, and I am here today with quite a fascinating character, very young athlete, particularly for long course. He is from Denmark, and his name is Daniel Bekkegaard. And I know I'm not pronouncing it perfectly, but I've been told that's good enough. Welcome, Daniel.
Welcome. Thanks a lot. Nice to hear from you, Belinda.
Yeah, look, now, Daniel, I was saying to you before we started the podcast, officially started the podcast, that I always get quite excited when I'm speaking to pro athletes that I actually don't know much about, because it's just as interesting and as fascinating for me to do this podcast as it is for our listeners, because I get to learn a little bit more about an unknown athlete. And you're from Denmark. Obviously, that is where you're living now, yes?
Yeah, it is. I have base in Odense, Denmark.
Okay, so, and that's where you've grown up, so born and bred?
Yeah, not in Odense, it's kind of it's one island, and I'm from Copenhagen.
Okay.
The capital, so,
That I know, that's good, that part I do know. Now, Daniel, you are really quite young. I mean, I know you probably don't think so, but for me, 24 years of age and already doing so well over the longer distances, how long have you actually been in the sport of triathlon for?
Well, since I guess 2015, not quite sure, but around that time. I was a competitive swimmer before, and then I broke my arm, and that kind of made running and cycling a part of my rehab.
Yeah.
And I just I found suddenly you could actually enjoy training and being outside and, you know, riding with your friends and stuff instead of just staring at the black line. So that was kind of my introduction.
So you obviously started swimming as a junior, as a child.
Yeah, like when I could walk, kind of.
Wow. And obviously showed a lot of talent from a very young age and took swimming very seriously. So professional swimmer.
It was definitely competitive swimmer. But I was pretty fortunate to be a part of a group with a lot of strong guys, and we had a very I would call it hardcore training environment. I got pretty serious pretty early. I had a good coach, and we just had a lot of fun, and that was good to me.
And what sort of distance did you compete over in swim when you were swimming?
Well, it kind of depended. You know, I was just outside of the national team, so that made the other guys on the team kind of the big shots, I would call it. We had a huge amount of talent, so I was always in the shadow. And we were competing at the relays, so I was kind of always the guy who had to swim breaststroke, although I was terrible at it. But we won some national titles and stuff, so that was kind of my calling. But I always liked longer distances, 200 fly, 4 IM, and 1500 meter freestyle. But it was actually kind of fun, because I was always I've always loved to, you know, train hard and the process in training. But at that point, I never really liked competitions. So that was kind of a big thing I have been improving the last, I would say, 4 years since I started triathlon.
Actually, that's a really interesting point because obviously, you know, I raced for many years before I then work. Now I work obviously on the other side of triathlon, and I do see it all the time, obviously with a lot of age groupers where I live here in Noosa, but also with the professional athletes where they train the house down and they are phenomenal. I always say they are professional trainers. However, they haven't quite learnt how to race. And there is, you're dead right, there is absolutely a knack to doing that, to be able to do
that. Yeah, it's a huge difference. Mm. And that's, you know, I was kind of a world champion in training for a couple of years. And, you know, it's awesome because you get this confidence boost to almost all the time in training, but it's just, you just get punched in the face when you go competing. And when you then get kind of into the, you know, I was a part of the Olympic group in Denmark, and that was at a period of time where I couldn't, you know, I was doing very well in training sessions, obviously, and just slaughtering myself.
Yeah.
But when it came race day, I couldn't do anything. And that's kind of a big hit to the face.
Absolutely.
So that's definitely something I've been working on the last years.
That's fascinating. And working on that, I mean, obviously, you do that by racing more and just and learning how to overcome certain issues on race day. But have you been doing anything else off the race course? So do you actually try any sort of visualization, or have you been seeing someone to try and go through that actual process of racing?
Well, actually, for me, it helped not racing that much, you know, long distance. And now we kind of fast forward pretty quickly, I guess, but it's a very, you know, a very hot topic, I would say. So for me, I started working with, back then, the national coach, Kasper Geil. And he definitely have been a huge part of me performing on race day. So when we started, I obviously was a bit younger and kind of... I would call it kind of an alpha seeking young guy. And I think it comes with the fact that always searching for not improvement, but confirmation and training. That's kind of then I felt like I was kind of empty when I was at the start line at races.
Wow.
So what we did was kind of take a couple of steps back, starting a collaboration with the Team Denmark's what's it called, mental coach.
Sports psychology type coaching.
Exactly. And just, you know, kind of starting from scratch with me, building up my values and, you know, all this huge process taking a couple of years.
Yeah.
Also for me to understand and stuff, because, you know, you can teach people something, but if they're not ready to kind of hear what the actual meaning behind it is, then it can be pretty difficult. So it has been kind of me learning to trust myself, definitely also trust Kyle, my coach. And it sounds kind of weird, but back then triathlon was the only thing in my life and in my head. But now it's, of course, it's the only thing in my life kind of, because I train that much, and you know, you do everything to prepare for the next session and stuff, so it is kind of a life. But mentally, I've gotten another perspective on training and on triathlon. So it's kind of being more relaxed, both in training and also at races.
Yeah.
And that has made sure that when the gun goes, I'm there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I'm there to compete.
And you have much more balance now, I suppose, with both the training, exactly, the racing, and everyday life as well. And Daniel, you've got to remember, and I know maybe it sounds easy coming from me because I'm, you know, a lot older than you, but you're still very young, particularly, as I said, in long distance triathlon. And I think a lot of people, a lot of athletes out there just think it's a given that if you are an exceptionally talented athlete like yourself, and that you are always wanting the best out of yourself in training, that you are naturally going to be a phenomenal competitor. But it doesn't always come easily. It's not always a second nature, like you've just said. And I find it fascinating that someone like yourself, who obviously is very talented, you come from a competitive background in swimming, and you are obviously very good and you're a great trainer, as you said, but you struggled with the actual racing side of things. And I think for a lot of our listeners out there, they wouldn't have realized that this was even an issue. So I think you bring up some really valid points. It's not a given that every single person that stands on a start line in any sport is a natural competitor. And sometimes it just takes a little bit of work. Like you said, you've been working on this for a few years, and obviously you've overcome it, because I know last year you had a breakthrough season in your long course racing. But before we get to that, did you start? Obviously, you said you broke your arm when you were a swimmer, which forced you into doing some running and riding as part of your rehab, which is a bonus for us in triathlon because we now have you. But did you get into short course first of all, or did you move into the half distance racing straight away, or were you in the for example, were you an Olympic distance athlete before you became a middle distance and long distance athlete?
Yeah, I got right into the talent program in Danish Triathlon Federation.
Okay, of course.
And that was kind of ETU, European Cups, European Junior Cups and stuff. I've never done an Olympic distance, but I was kind of in the mix on short course.
So sprint distance, sprint.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. And did you find you were always, you obviously the swimming was not an issue for you, because I mean, we look at long distance swimmers in triathlon as compared to the short course, the Olympic distance athletes, and it's a huge difference in swim ability. I'm assuming that when you did sprint distance, the swim was still a no-brainer for you. I'm sure you still got out right in front.
Actually not. I only had one competition where the swim was at my level, I would call it. And that was at the European Champs in Düsseldorf. I came out just behind Vincent Louis in second.
Okay, oh, that's interesting.
So that was when I finally kind of cracked the swim code in my brain, I guess. and that's that. Of course, that also comes back to learning how to race and trust yourself, and
of course,
doing all that stuff. But actually, I was the reason I started longer distance was I struggled a lot with asthma.
Okay. Yep.
You know, it just blocked every time I kind of got on the bike, and so I had 1 year without any results. I think I only finished like two races, and that was we kind of started training another way. Kind of going that way around it, and that have on
made
somehow
a difference.
It made a difference.
Yeah, and did you find when you moved from that shorter, more explosive, I mean, obviously when you're doing sprint distance, you are, as soon as that gun goes off, you're at 100% for the entire time, whereas I'm assuming now that you do middle distance and long distance, you know, you can back it off a bit, and that would be, I'm assuming, better for your asthma as well, so it would make it a lot easier to keep it under control.
Yeah, I have not done a sprint distance since.
Since?
so I actually, I'm maybe gonna do another sprint distance, like in the start of 2021. Just to see where things are at, because we haven't kind of triggered the asthma in certain situations where it happened before.
Right.
I think that some part of it is mental.
Absolutely. Some form of anxiety.
But for sure, it's another way to race, obviously, and it requires a whole other skill set than sprint distance. So it's kind of two different sports, in my opinion. I don't know if it would still happen, but for sure you can kind of it's not that high, you know, lactate kind
lactate
of
level,
stuff
yeah.
all the
yeah.
time. So definitely another stress to the body. But I would say it's far worse racing the 70.3 than else when it comes to pain.
Especially these days when it just seems to be getting faster and faster. I mean, back in my day, the half distance was raced the same as what you guys are racing the full distance over. So it's incredible to see how fast it is now. So now listen,
it's,
Daniel.
It's actually funny because my coach, he said, like, after I raced in Tallinn this year.
Yes, yeah.
And after Tallinn, he looked at my numbers and he was like, it's crazy how you constantly have me to look at, you know, re-evaluating what's possible.
What are the right numbers for this particular distance? I mean, everyone's doing it all the time. It's insane. Talking about your recent win in 70.3 Tallinn in Estonia, which was firstly wonderful that we had some racing back this year. You know, there's been obviously a lack of racing. And of course you won it. You had an incredible race. And I'm sure for every single person lining up that day, there was a massive unknown over everyone because everyone's had different training methods because of pools being closed, because, you know, you can't go outdoors, because there have been no races. So I'm sure every single athlete on that start line was questioning what sort of shape they're in. But obviously you'd been doing all the right things because your race was really, it was fantastic. And, you know, you beat some big names like Sebi Kinley. So firstly, I just want to ask you, what was it like being on that start line again? Did you actually, like the week leading into it, did you think, maybe it won't even happen? Maybe it'll get cancelled like every other race keeps getting cancelled. Did you actually have some doubt? And it must have been quite a surreal feeling standing on that start line knowing we are really going to race today.
Well, it's funny you say that because, like, 2 weeks before the race, I was doubting myself like massively. I was not even sure I was gonna start because I made the usual mistake of, like, I enjoy training and I train a lot. I just buried myself in training. So I was not hitting like the right numbers, and that made kind of a stress in my head that just, you know, the thought that 4 weeks prior I was running like crazy. Everything just came kind of together, and then we came closer to racing and a race actually happening. I just couldn't do anything, and that made a huge stress in my head. So that's kind of that's also kudos to my coach to just, you know, a huge part of racing is actually getting to the start line.
Absolutely.
I was kind of maybe you can call it kind of naive to I believed every second that the race was going to happen, because otherwise you know, I had to prepare, and I had to be sure to race, so I chose just to be absolute certain. But, you know, the head coach, the national coach was doubting it. And, you know, everybody was asking questions. And I was just like, it will happen. And I will fly to Estonia. And,
you know, I love that attitude. It's the only attitude to have, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. And I just had to do that mentally for my own personal sake. But, you know, just first of all, the guys in Estonia made a wonderful race, and it was so friendly and welcoming, and it was very, very nice to be there. And it's funny because, you know, obviously there's some stuff happening with due to the corona situation that's not kind of the usual racing lead up, but as soon as we were at the start line, you know, everything
perfect. Yeah.
And that was awesome to feel that even though it's a strange situation, then it's just as normal. So it was great. But obviously, when you see as you said, Sebi Kienle and Dreitz lining up at the start line, you're like, oh, it's not going to be easy today.
So. It's always the Germans. They're everywhere.
Yeah, it's like, there's always like 10 Germans, and they're always coming at you. So, it was great.
And obviously everything, once the gun went off, you know, you obviously went into race mode, which we spoke about, you know, and obviously everything clicked on the day. So obviously all those negative thoughts about you were being a little bit overdone on the race, on the start line, you know, were your coach obviously got you in really good shape, tapered you just the right amount so that you were able to pull off a really, really strong race.
Yeah, it was, he did a very, very good job to, it was not, you know, it was mostly, I think physically I was there. It was just mentally I had to be ready and
and confident.
He did that. And and confident, true. And you know it yourself that when the gun goes, then everything becomes kind of a task.
Exactly.
And you just have to, to do it. And
I totally agree. You know, as a professional athlete, I think when you've become a true professional athlete, because you can be nervous and you can have butterflies and all sorts of things before that gun goes off. And I think that's completely normal. But I think once the gun goes off, you have a job to do. And as a professional athlete, you are going to do your job on that day to the absolute best of your ability.
Yeah. And trust the mission you're on and
Totally agree. Now, I'm going to bring it up. And I spoke to you before to make sure it was okay. Obviously, you had a breakthrough year last year, winning your first, I think that was your first 70.3 distance win, and also, of course, your first Ironman win. I know you've been doing, I looked back a bit further, and I know you did a stack of challenge events in, I think, 2017 and 2018, but mainly half distance. And you still were way up there. Most of the results I looked at, you were either top five, top six, podium, so top three. But last year looked to be like a breakout year for you as far as a professional athlete goes in longer distance racing, with your first 70.3 win and then your big win in Ironman Austria. I do recall when you won Ironman Austria last year, there was a big kerfuffle. That's the word we use here in Australia. A big kerfuffle about the way that you finished. And so I remember going back and having a look at the finish and thinking, well, no, this is just a young 23-year-old who has just won their very first Ironman distance race and is so over the moon that, of course, you're going to – I mean, I don't even think you're in control of what you do at that particular point in time, because it's just anyone that's had a dream for that long and to finally realize that you've ticked that box – what was going through your mind? Were you just that, you were that elated with your first win?
Well, it's obviously a lot of people ask me about it and also making their own minds on
of course, yes, yes.
It was. And, you know, when it's all, you know, leading back to my swimming days where I was not really, you know, I wasn't the best, and I've never really been proud of myself, for what mm-hmm. I've achieved. I've always been very hard on myself, you know, judging myself way harder than, you know, anybody else would do. And yep. I still do it. and that's, you know, that was the first time when I, you know, when I hit the red carpet, and yep. that you kind of wake up from your race.
Exactly.
Then,
yep.
Then I realized what I did. I raced for the PVAC team at that
at
point.
The time,
and,
that's right. Yep.
And I saw people from PVAC on the sideline, and they were so happy. And you know, for the first time, I realized I had done something I could be proud of myself.
Yeah.
And that was the feeling. You know, you see all these years with no results and only disappointments, and you know nobody knows what have happened
beforehand
my life,
exactly.
That was just what came out, and that's how it is.
Well, I for one, I sat here and I showed my husband. I said, look at everyone getting all upset about this finish. And I said to my husband, I really don't understand it. I said, all I see is a young boy that's fulfilling his dreams. And I said, I want to cry, because I think to watch the sheer exhilaration in your face and to see you obviously achieve, and now that I actually know your background, it's even more impressive. But to see you achieve something at such a young age, All I could see was you, and it gave me goosebumps. So I thought it was amazing, and I know obviously there was a little bit of, as we said, controversy, but you shouldn't be ashamed of that finish at all. It was unbelievable. I still think it's unbelievable. And as a female watching that finish, the only thing I was shitty about was I can't stand the fact that they have dancing women and finish line women at a finish line in this day and age anyway, Daniel. It's insane. Come on. But that's a whole different topic of argument. We're concentrating on you now. So I thought it was quite incredible, and I think since then, I think that was probably a pivotal time in your career where you truly realize that you have what it takes to be the very best in your sport. And to be an absolute champion, and then you've obviously sealed that deal again. You know, you've had quite a few great races since then, over in the Middle East, and also obviously with your recent win in Estonia a few weeks ago. So I think, you know, for some people, I think when they look back in their careers and they look at that turning point, that one special win that just solidifies that they are on the right path and doing the right thing, I think you would go back and you would say, yep, that is the race that proved to me that I had what it takes.
True. And that's, you're so right. You know, afterwards, actually, you said it was my breakthrough year last year. And, you know, it looks like that on the paper, but I also made so many mistakes last year.
Yeah, of course.
Because I had a certain level of fitness, and I was going strong, but I also had I had two crashes in racing, and I had, I had a mechanical in when I raced Kona.
Yeah.
And I was just up there in the mix, and then, you know, I hit a pothole and cracked my handlebars cracked. Mm. So I also kind of, it was a learning process, because I don't look back at 2019 and say like
it was a perfect year.
I got what I wanted, but definitely the Klagenfurt and also the Lahti race the week before, where I also won. That kind of made, you know, made room for a lot of self-confidence that I can perform on race day, and also, you know, the picture of, or the belief of what it takes to perform on race day.
Yeah, exactly.
So definitely that was the most important race I've. Yeah, now I kind of see everything in another perspective, and yeah, you know, also the kind of the security that it gives that I can be there on race day, and I can do what it takes on race day.
To be at the front. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's definitely the most kind of the turning point in my career.
Now, you just mentioned that your things obviously didn't go your way in Kona with broken handlebars. And then, of course, we come January, February, we get a few races over this side of the world, because obviously January, February over your side of the world in Europe, it's winter and you guys are all having your off season. But over here, we got a few races in. We got Challenge Wānaka in New Zealand in February, and then we got Ironman New Zealand in March. But then, of course, all hell broke loose and COVID hit us all. So how was that to deal with? Because going back to the mental side of things, obviously your last race in Kona wasn't what you wanted. It wasn't what you trained for, and it wasn't what you thought would happen. But often what we do then is we think, oh, well, let's just look towards the next race and we'll rectify things. But you didn't get that opportunity until a few weeks ago. Oh, you did? Did you go?
No, I raced in Bahrain in December.
Oh, Bahrain. Of course, that was in December, yeah. Over a half distance. But you haven't been able to do a full distance race since Kona?
No.
But you were lucky. That was you're lucky you got that one in December. I forgot that.
Definitely. Because otherwise, for me mentally, also that I could perform, but mentally it was so important going into Corona.
No, I agree.
Because I was so mad after Kona, and you know, it was happening, and you know, going back to the thing that about doing the right things at the right time. In race situations. So kind of, you know, always playing the scene again with how it happened and everything, what I would have done different, and you know, all that stuff. So I was so happy to go to Bahrain and kind of get a little bit calm to going into off season, and starting the build up to hopefully a new season, which didn't really happen.
Didn't really happen
as planned, obviously.
a little bit. You've got a taste.
Yeah, exactly.
So obviously, how has it been for you? Just talk me through personally how it's been for you. Obviously, when everything started to shut down around March, April, and then when it actually finally hit you that races were not going to be happening, that you weren't going to have the European season. I think this is the first time in 15 years straight that I haven't traveled to Europe to work at the European races, which is crazy for me. So it was, I don't even race anymore, but I definitely went through a period of depression in June, July, when I would normally be in Europe working at Challenge Roth. Obviously, I also go in September to Challenge Almere. We had the championship and also the Collins Cup at Samarin planned. So I had three trips to Europe planned this year that I was so excited for, getting to work with all of you guys, and it didn't happen. But I can't even imagine or even begin to fathom what it felt like for you as an athlete, because you're not getting to do what you do best.
I'm maybe have to disappoint you there, because I wasn't really feeling it that much. Because obviously I was in Gran Canaria when hell broke loose.
But still
Spain was kind of a, you know, red zone.
Yeah.
So I just had to fly home immediately, and you know, everything got canceled, all flights got canceled and stuff. Yeah. So I was the most stressed I've been was the first couple of days, because I wasn't sure if I could go home. And I heard that, you know, I couldn't leave the apartment and everything. So when I finally got home to Denmark and kind of, you know, getting an overview of what was happening, then we could kind of assess the situation and make a plan. You know, afterwards, and then we just, you know, I started 2020 with an injury in the hip, so I couldn't run for the first couple of months. And yeah, so that, you know, for me, it just meant more time to get back into shape and, you know, doing the right things.
And taking your time. Yeah, taking your time, doing it properly. Yep.
And just getting a solid foundation going. Yep. And then it's strange because you just get into this kind of rhythm where one week just takes the other.
Yep, I know. Obviously,
we had Corona, so I couldn't attend to any, you know, social, you know, meetings or family dinners or anything. You know, I couldn't really see anybody, but I have two friends. We were kind of a bubble together, and decided that we would not see anybody else, but just
stay together. And these are training friends that you're talking about.
Yeah. Team.
Oh, perfect.
So that was for us. It was kind of the perfect situation in a bad situation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so we just, you know, we went out and just did what we had to do and had fun, you know, doing stuff we couldn't do normally and just, you know, looking at things on the bright side that obviously I'm only 24. So it's 5 or 10 years. I will be very good, hopefully. And this is just one way to ensure that the next couple of years I will, you know, be on my top game. So we just looked at it like, you know, it's a period of time we have to get through, and we just have to do it as strong as possible. So we just try to have fun while doing it. And actually, I think it's not to like sound cocky or anything, but I think we got through the Corona time, like not placing a foot wrong.
No, I agree with you. I mean, just listening to you and your attitude, Daniel, for a 24-year-old, if you hadn't have told me your age, you've got the head of a 50-year-old. I mean, you are far wiser than your 24 years on this earth. And I think a lot of athletes, not just age group athletes, but pro athletes out there should listen to this, because you had exactly the right attitude that was needed. I mean, you know, you concentrate on what you can do and not on what you can't do. And it's often about thinking outside of the box that you're in. So mentally, it looks like
one thing that really I really, you know, realized was that it's all about perspective.
Absolutely.
You know, we could sit there and see the on the internet or at the news on the TV that, you know, people were dying of Corona, which is terrible, and, you know, people losing their jobs and people, you know, all this people who suffered during Corona, and actually we didn't really have anything to worry about.
No, that's right.
Anything happening to us. So you know, I've had my little brother got diagnosed with cancer, and my you know, other little brother have also suffered from stuff that's far worse than things I will ever, you know,
experience yourself. Yep.
So, you know, I have nothing to complain about, and yeah, you know, it's only not racing, life goes on. So it's just to see things at the right perspective.
I totally agree. So, you know, obviously mentally you've handled this entire period of time exceptionally well. But what about financially? Obviously talking to a lot of the pro athletes, particularly here in Noosa where I'm based, I was doing some social media for witsup.com, which is a women's site. And Amelia Watkinson, who just won Ironman New Zealand, and of course it was amazing, Ironman Cairns, excuse me, and it was an amazing race. But she's been, you know, her along with a lot of other pro athletes have been struggling a little bit just because sponsors, obviously, they're struggling, so they haven't been able to pay their normal retainers. And so a lot of these pro athletes have had to take on part-time jobs just to survive. But financially for yourself, I know you've got some great sponsors behind you, and I know that because you always give them a great plug on Instagram, on your social media, which is awesome. So have you been okay financially? Because, I mean, obviously for a lot of pro athletes, racing is still the way that they make a good chunk of their income. If you cannot race and make prize money, then you're not making money to survive. But in a time where you just said, you know, a lot of businesses are struggling and a lot of sponsors are struggling, have you had any issues financially or have you been okay?
I've been, I've been okay. We had PTO going in and
they've been amazing. Yeah.
Exactly. That's
been amazing.
That's really, really, yeah, really amazing. What they've done. So,
I agree.
So that was a big part of it. But also, as you said, I have a lot of great sponsors and obviously they also know how I feel and how I make my money. And obviously it's still racing. I make the most money. So when I hit talent, I had €100 on my account. I had nothing left.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty good,
good motivation.
yeah, exactly. But also then I had nothing to worry about, really. And that was, you know, obviously that's also a part of kind of trusting the process and trusting, you know, that I wasn't broke until the end. I've been very, very lucky to have a lot of partners who believes in me and also who were ready to help me along the way.
Yeah, and look, Daniel, sometimes people say, oh, Belinda, you can't talk about financial issues or situations with athletes, but I think it's really important to Daniel because after talking to Amelia the other weekend and she was a little bit embarrassed about her predicament, I'm like, well, don't be embarrassed because at the end of the day, you still won. You came out and you won Ironman Cairns, just like you came out and you won 70.3 Talon, and you go as rose above all the struggles that you've had to get there and you've won this race. And I think it's important for the world to know that it's so difficult for professional athletes right now. It really is, you know.
And it's also funny because it's not only right now. It's like when you're just about to make it.
Yeah.
I remember leading up to 70.3 Lahti last year. I had one and a half months where I was kind of living on oatmeals.
Yeah.
Because I had nothing. Nothing left to, you know, I had no money left, so I had to eat what I could afford. And that's a lot of people and a lot of athletes lives like that because we just want to make it so much that, you know, all the money goes into racing and the equipment and everything. So it's obviously it is a problem in triathlon that it's not big enough to, you know, unless you're Jan Frodeno or one of the big hitters, then it's very, very difficult to make it, make the wheels spinning. But I guess that's also part of the scam.
You keep being
hungry for results and stuff.
Exactly what I was just about to say, because I just look in the eyes of an athlete that's racing and the difference that you see between an athlete where, you know, it's not, I don't like to use the word win at all costs, but that they will do everything possible to get across that finish line in first place, because they are so hungry and they know that that first place prize money will mean so much. But it's, I love watching it because it's, it gives me goosebumps, because you can just see that they are going to give it absolutely everything on race day, which is just what you did in Tallinn, and it's just what Amelia did the other weekend in Cairns. And it's unbelievable to watch. I get really excited watching it because it's, and you know, when I was an athlete all those years ago and I was relying solely on prize money, I was the same. And I found that's when I often got my best results. It was when I had all the sponsors and I was sitting pretty. I honestly, looking back now, I lost a little bit of that, just a little bit of that hunger, because you'd be in second or third and you'd think, is it really worth the fight? Because, you know, I don't absolutely have to win, but so I don't know. It was just a little different. I preferred it when I actually really, really needed to win a race, that I got the most out of myself.
But it is funny because actually a lot of my sponsors are still like, bonus oriented, so
yes, so it's still that carrot's still there.
Exactly, and I love the feeling that people will, you know, reward me if I do well. And I like to prove myself before you know, before the money or the equipment comes in. And
totally,
I think that's a nice way to race. But
no, totally agree.
I agree with you. I think it's a fine line between your, of course you have bills to pay and rent and stuff. So obviously you need some money, but it's a fine line of maintaining that eye of the tiger.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Now, talking of, we just spoke briefly about the PTO, the Professional Triathlete Organization, and they have been amazing this year. I know Challenge Family are working very closely with them, because I know they love what they're doing and agree with everything they're doing in helping the professional athletes make it through. And there's a lot of races that are happening all around the world right now that the PTO are helping support. And now one of those races at the end of this year, which is actually their own race, is the PTO Championship event in Challenge Daytona, which is in December. And I know that you have already automatically qualified because you are ranked 22nd on the PTO ranking, I do believe. So, and you are the highest ranked Dane out of the males or females. I think the next highest would be Marja Stag-Nielsen at 35. So that's pretty awesome in itself to be ranked 22. I mean, there's some phenomenal athletes. Phenomenal. Now, you are planning on going to that race in December?
Obviously, you know, just the race course, the fact then that all the greatest athletes will be there, and you know, everything about the event just turns me on. I think it's so awesome to have an event like that. It's obviously they have spent a lot of money making professional athletes get by, and it's not about us only paying back attending to the event, but also I think it's a great way to make, you know, get athletes, professional athletes, their own voices, and kind of, you know, it's a great showcase for our sport and for professional athletes. So I think it's, you have to turn up. It's the only world championships we will have this year, and hopefully it will also be a world championship caliber event the coming years, because I think it's an exciting way to race, and also, you know, put a race up on a race course like Daytona. It's I really look forward to it and getting to race shape again. So I think it's, you have to attend. It's a no-brainer.
I agree, and obviously with a $1 million prize purse, it's phenomenal prize purse. Paying really deep, you know, paying at least the top 20 or 30 athletes. So again, a great incentive for all the best athletes to go. Now, I was in Daytona last year and obviously watched the race unfold, and that's when we had the pro race under lights, and saw an insane race between Lionel Sanders and Pablo De Pina, which was, I mean, I don't think any of us had really prepared for it to come down to that. So it was unbelievable. And then obviously the same with Lucy Charles Barclay and Paula Finlay, just having those two go head to head for so long. But again, you're right. I've seen NASCAR on, I'd seen NASCAR on TV before, but I'd never actually been on the track, and it's huge. It's so much bigger than I could have ever anticipated. It almost takes your breath away. The distance, obviously I love the concept. All the age group athletes will be racing on the Saturday, and on the Sunday morning, it is purely just the professional athletes, which I love. I think they should be separated. So the pro athletes have their own race day. The age group athletes have their own race day. They get to then come back and watch you guys do what you do best. Everything inside the Daytona Speedway. And it's going to be quite interesting because, obviously, if you've never been to a NASCAR track before, the track itself is really, it's quite steep. It's a lot more banked than I'd given it credit. When you actually go, so is that going to be an interesting thing as far as the bike goes? I know last year there were quite a few athletes that actually used the banks to their advantage, and it was real, it was almost like seeing a track race, to be honest. So is that something you've thought about tactic wise?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm heading to the track also a couple of times a week. Next month, to prepare for maybe using it as an advantage. Because it's also about, you know, learning, as you said, tactics and how to approach a track like that. And I heard from one of the other Danes, it was that steep. So you have to prepare for it. It's just like all the stuff you have to prepare for leading into a race. So it will be awesome to get on the racetrack, and also an iconic racetrack like that. It's huge experience, I guess.
And look, I've been working with obviously Challenge Daytona team and closely with the PTO, and I know that they're working everything out for the pro athletes to a T. So it really is going to be something special, and I'm definitely heading over to work the event too. And just looking at the names that are going to, that have said, given the green light that they're going, and I'm not going to say it yet because I know that the PTO want to announce it themselves, and it's pretty exciting. Yeah. But just, I mean, obviously, let's just talk about the Danish athletes, the male athletes. There's yourself. Obviously, you've got Christian Hugenhaag, who's I believe has been given a roll down because he is very highly ranked as well. Obviously, the top 40 were automatically qualified, and then any that don't go, it rolls down. So I think you'll have a few Danish athletes. Marja Stag Nielsen, of course, 35th, she automatically qualifies for the event as well. So it's pretty cool that, you know, a small country like Denmark, and you've got quite a few athletes that have automatically qualified to go over and race.
Yeah, it's. I would hope for it to be more, because I guess we have at least two guys, Miki Tokholt Nielsen, and Magnus also. Because we, you know, I think it would be, we race kind of the same way. In that regards, it would be pretty awesome. And also just the level in Danish middle distance triathlon have just skyrocketed the last 2 years.
Totally agree.
Of course, it would be awesome to share the experience with the fellow Danes, but it's up to PTO to select those guys. So hopefully it will happen.
Yeah, I have a sneaky suspicion there'll be a few more. Let's just leave it at that, Daniel.
Yeah.
Oh no, it's going to be an amazing event. That's for sure. And have you actually looked ahead to 2021? Obviously, what a lot of people have done is they've said, okay, 2020 is what it is. We do what we can. Like you said, you got some amazing training in. You've managed to get some great races in. You've got one big event left to go. Have you looked towards 2021? With your coach, have you sat down and said, okay, this is what we're going to do? Because, and the reason I ask this, Daniel, is because normally, you know, you would you would end with Kona in October, and then you may do one or two more little smaller races, and then you know you genuinely take time off, and then you start again, say, I don't know, May, June. So, yeah. But you don't really need that much time off now because you haven't really had a full season of racing. So did things change, or will you try and stick to the same sort of protocols?
I've never really been a fan of, you know, the usual kind of
big
way
time
to
off.
Do stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. Of course you need time off, but you have to do it the proper way. And I think the fact that actually we can go in a normal year, we can go race the year round. So that's also makes kind of, you know, if I wanted to, I could go to Bahrain like last year and stuff.
Yes,
so
yeah,
so
yeah.
You can plan the season just as you want it to be. I haven't really, you know, talked with my coach about next year, but we believe in kind of, I'll race what race really turns me on, and obviously that's championship races. So yeah, I'll get a Kona slot early in the year, and then yeah, we have, you know, the European middle distance, and yeah, let's see if Roth calls, then it will be, maybe it will be difficult to turn down.
Turn that one down. It's a pretty incredible event. And what about something like the Collins Cup, the championship in Slovakia, in Samarin?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a course that also suits me well.
Suits you. I agree.
And I think it's an awesome initiative to do stuff like the Collins Cup. Kind of trying to make triathlon more than just the usual racing. So I think that will be very exciting.
Yeah, I do too. I must admit, I mean, obviously I completely understand why it wasn't able to go ahead in June this year, but I was so looking forward to it because I've been to Expo Onyxphere where they hold the race, and it is a phenomenal training center. You ask any pro athlete that's raced there before, and they'll tell you that it's insane. And so to have the Collins Cup come up with their, you know, with the idea of the Collins Cup, and to have that this, it was going to be a whole new ball game again. So I think that's probably one race that I'm actually looking forward to just as much as the PTO champs at Challenge Daytona this year. It's going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah, definitely. And also just to, you know, get all the guys in the mix.
Exactly, again, yeah.
It's not that, you know, we have sports where the best of the best meets each other almost every week. And then we have triathlon where we have like the 70.3, the Kona, the Frankfurt or Roth, or, know, these certain races where, you know, a couple of big guys will turn up. But otherwise, we do not really have these races where we can see the best going head to head.
Very true.
So I think Collins Cup will be a game changer regarding that. Definitely in Europe, and hopefully also, you know, people who are in lockdown all over the world will be able to get into Europe at that point of time.
I was always saying end of December we're starting again, but now I'm like, okay, as long as we've got it by next June, I'm happy.
Exactly.
It's crazy. Exactly. Look, now, Daniel, before I let you go, obviously 24 years of age, if you look at all the top athletes right now, so the Jan Frodenos, the Sebi Kinleys, Lionel Sanders, obviously Lucy Charles Barclay is a little bit of an anomaly because she is still very young for someone that's reached so much so far in her career. But you are still incredibly young, and there is no way you're anywhere near your potential yet. Is this something you're really excited about? Have you looked forward for, say, another 5 years, another 10 years? Because realistically, most of the long course athletes don't reach their peak till they're in their mid-30s. So you've got another 10 years up your sleeve. Is that something
that sounds pretty good?
Yeah. And then, is it pretty exciting? Because really, I mean, And the great thing about coming from a swimming background is you also don't have that wear and tear on your body that, say, a runner might have. Swimming is probably the best of all three, if you think about it, as far as wear and tear on the body. So, you know, you're in pretty bloody good shape to have a really long and illustrious career.
Yeah, you know, obviously I look at especially Kindley and Frodo and you know, how they've done stuff and what they've achieved I wouldn't call it like they're not old, but
mature
later in their careers. And also I've heard some podcasts and spoken to Kindley at races and stuff, and try to kind of learn what, you know, the lessons they have learned through the years. So of course I have big plans for the future, but as both of them are telling, then it's all about having fun every day and kind of looking at
enjoying it
every day as a process to getting into race shape, and that's what I focus on right now. And focus on the essentials, and then I hopefully good things will come in a couple of years. So when it comes to goals and the goal setting and all of that stuff, obviously I, as every other athlete, I have Kona and 70.3 world champs. But I also know that when it comes to those titles, it's more being there on the day, and a lot of things can happen. It's not always the best athlete who wins on race day, a part of last year in Kona, definitely. Yeah. So it's more about, you know, enjoying the journey and enjoying every day as part of a bigger process. And that's a lesson I struggle with time to time, but that's also the beauty of it. So I think if you do it like that, it's good things will come.
Totally agree with
Totally
agree. Listening to someone like
ten or 15 years in Kona,
and we can still, and we can have this conversation again. All right, I'm going to hold you to that. I like it. And speaking of someone like Sebi Kindley, obviously I was around way back when he started, and you are absolutely correct. He's been through the same process that you are now talking about, and from the outside, I've never seen him falter, and I'm sure he'll be able to tell you all that's not true. He's had his ups and downs. He's been plagued with injury. Of course, no one's process is perfect. But this is a man that said as a primary school kid that when he grew up, he wanted to be a professional athlete. And I'm sure he got laughed at when he was young and put this up on it. They had a special class when they were talking about it, what they wanted to do with their lives, what career they wanted, and he said he wanted to be a professional athlete. So to see him actually fulfill that dream and not just become a professional athlete, but become one of the best professional athletes in long course that we have ever seen, and he still loves it to this day. So you couldn't ask for a better mentor there. So Steppy's like he's top shelf for me as far as pro athletes and the process goes. So he's a good one to follow.
And also just as a person,
absolutely. I think
he was first of all, he was kind of one of the first people, or he was the reason I got into triathlon
in the first place.
Because I saw 70.3 in Las Vegas, where he just made that, huge attack on the bike. And I was like, how on earth is that possible?
how did he do that?
Superhuman. Yeah. And then I met him. I raced him a couple of times in 2018 in Challenge. What's it called in Finland?
Challenge Turku.
Yeah, Turku. Yep. Exactly. Yep. And also in Challenge Valsi.
You're in Austria.
Yeah. And then, you know, I spoke to him a couple of times and everything was cool. And then, you know, just realizing that he's only a human being, like the rest of us, but, yeah. but he's, at the same time, he's one of the guys I've grown up watching on television, and I'm a huge fanboy of both.
Yeah. Don't worry, you know, almost, you're not alone there. I'm sure there's plenty. There's plenty.
Almost every athlete I race right now is like, you know, it's almost unreal because that's yeah. people I've been watching on television. So
that's awesome. But it's
funny because in when we were in Tallinn, we went to the press conference, and that was my first press conference, and we were standing outside of the hotel, and Keenly comes down and started speaking to me. And you know, even though, you know, I'm in my right to be there at the press conference, but just the fact that he speaks to me, that's just I didn't know what to say, and I kind of stumbled over words.
Yeah.
it was so fun, and I think he realized too. But
that's cool.
It's so fun to, like, he's just a normal guy, and he's so down to earth and ready to teach what he have learned through the years. And
exactly.
he's as you said a very, you know, a great mentor and a role model in sports in general. So it's nice to have one of those guys doing as well as he's doing right now.
I agree.
Yeah, showing in Kona for sure with that performance. So
Daniel, he's pretty awesome. I think in another 10 to 12 years time, We'll as you said, we'll check in again with you, and you'll be the next Sebastian Kinley. So you'll be the one doing the mentoring, and there'll be other up and coming athletes that start stumbling for words when they go to talk to you too.
Well, yeah, it's I don't know about that, but I'll try. Let's see what's happening.
Oh, I love it, honestly. Well, listen, thank you so much for your time today. You're an absolute darling. And as I said, one of my favorite things about doing this podcast is I get the opportunity to pick and choose athletes all around the world. And there's nothing better than talking to an athlete for the very first time and realizing that they're an absolute darling. So thank you. You're
well,
a wonderful
thank you,
human being.
So.
And I really look forward to seeing you in Daytona in December.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you too. And thanks a lot for the call. It was nice chatting with you.
Thank you, Don. Speak to you soon.
Me too.
Thanks for listening to Coffee Calls with Belinda. I really hope you enjoyed listening. If you'd like to continue listening and stay updated on our latest podcasts, then please subscribe. It would also be great if you could rate our podcast and leave us a review. If you have any specific questions you'd like me to ask the athletes, then please send through to the following email address, podcast@challenge-family.com. The making of these podcasts would not be possible without the wonderful help of our great partners, Powerbar, Otso, Zone 3, Lubos Bilic at LB Training, Sport No Limit Group, and VeloSoc. But for now, thanks so much for listening, and I'll be back soon for another coffee.